good afternoon from the magical Isle of Vashon. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly gathering. And it is, of course, as always, on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and streamed live all over the world from Stockholm to Singapore on voiceofvashon.org. And not only from Singapore to Stockholm, but in all of the places in between. And that gives me the opportunity to say that a couple of really great things happened in this last week. One of them was confirmation that there are people out there who listen. And those a couple of those people have come back to me with birthdays that they want me to keep track of and talk about at the appropriate time. And there were a couple of people who made a point of thanking me and thus thanking the Voice of Vashon for this program that we're able to do together every week. So one of those places in between is a town in the Commonwealth of Virginia by the name of Reston. And Reston, Virginia is a planned community. It's sort of like the, if you remember, the Levitt towns of both Bowie, Maryland and Levittown, New York, only it is a much more elegant version of Levittown. Anyway, it's a planned community, and I have a friend who was a visitor of Mary's and mine in Cambridge, and she also is the mother of my professor and doctor in Stockholm. And she, this morning, as I was getting all of my notes put together in my usual haphazard way, because I no longer have an XO to do things like that or a captain's secretary to do things like that. And I decided to check my traffic. And there was this lovely message from Karen on my incoming traffic this morning. And that served to remind me of things that we had all done together in Cambridge and in other places. And then, of course, the memories start flooding back about many things that and people that have touched us over the years. So I recognize those people who sent me messages during the week of thanks for the program. I believe that soon we get to a begging period called Give Big. And when Give Big comes up, I will give all of us the opportunity to make contributions to those do-goods that we particularly care about. And of course, one of those for me is the Voice of Vashon. But we'll talk about that as soon as Kate, who is the executive director for the Voice, tells me that it is the appropriate time and exactly what the drill will be. The binnacle list has increased by 10. During the week, I had a telephone call from Stephen, my son, in Fairbanks, and I think I already mentioned this once, but I mention it again because I dread the arrival of the news that more of the children in particular in that family have been affected by the virus. So the binnacle list, of course, is for all people who have physical challenges. They may be mental, they may be emotional, they may be financial, they may be ethical. Any of you out there who are challenged in some way, the binnacle list is for you, and your captain from the chair is reaching out to touch all of you with the hopes that everything will be resolved in the proper and seamanlike way. One of the ways that ships are taken off of the binnacle list is for them to be repaired and go back into service. Unhappily, I must report that a ship that has a name which is particularly precious to me is the USS Bonhomme Richard. And you all will recall that Bonnie Dick, as she is known in the Navy and the Coast Guard fleets, suffered a very serious fire last year. And at that time, I looked at the photographs of the damage and I made the prediction then, which has now come true, that she probably would not be returned to active service. And that's exactly what's going to happen. She has now been taken out of commission with a suitable ceremony, and she is going to be taken someplace to be dismantling. The word, she goes to the knacker's yard, she gets broken up. The sad thing about this is that this is an ancient and proud name in our Navy fleet, Bonhomme Richard, and the ship that carried the name had been in active service for a number of years. So she wasn't exactly a new ship, but she certainly had many, many more years of life left in her. And so it is my hope that some new construction will be given her name, that it will be a suitably grand ship and not one of those miserable literal combat ships or whatever the Navy is calling them, those ships that are looking for a mission, and that it is a suitably grand ship, and that a piece of the one that was just disconnected or decommissioned rather will be carved out of her and will be sent to the builder's yards for whichever is the next ship to bear the name. So, and of course, the other binnacle list entry that ended with the death of His Royal Highness, the Prince Philip. And I have a couple things to say about that. So I watched the funeral for HRH. And there were a couple of observations about it. First of all, I watched it on cable news network. And in the lead up to it, before the arrival of Her Majesty the Queen, CNN could not resist putting the adverts on. And so over on the left-hand side of the screen was a little subscreen that was showing what was going on as the royal family formed up and mustered in to make the procession behind the Land Rover that was carrying the prince's coffin. But on the right-hand side, in a much larger subscreen, were the various advertising. So I was given the opportunity for, among other things, to become a patron of Nutrisystem. I thought that they could have, if nothing else, what they could have done was each one of the advertisers make a statement. Because what we saw in the funeral itself was an exhibit of duty that was acknowledged, duty that was accepted, and duty that was followed. And I'm talking in particular about Her Majesty the Queen. To see her walk into St. George's Chapel, to be sitting alone, the protocol for those things very strictly observed, and then to be there as her husband's coffin was lowered into the vault under the chapel, was just excruciatingly touching. And the example to the entire world of the acceptance of duty, which she did on the day that she was told that her father had died, George VI had died. She was in Kenya with the Duke at that time. And at that time, she made a statement to all of her subjects, as well as to the Commonwealth, in which she said that should her life be either short or long, that it would be devoted to her subjects. And she has lived up to that, and she now is almost 95. So I think that the CNN could have done a better job. The actual filming or the actual televising was done through a pool, so everybody saw the same from the same camera, from the same camera angle, and I thought that the whole thing was done just beautifully and was a great example of duty to all of us. So we move on to things which are a little bit more cheerful. It's a beautiful day here on the magical Isle of Vashon. Off of Captain's Quarters in the Federal Anchorage is a bulk carrier, and the interesting thing about this particular bulk carrier is that although she is Liberian flag, she is owned and managed by an American company, and there's very little other information about her on marine traffic, which leads me to wonder what she is all about. And I'm going to do a little bit more digging and a couple of other sources and see if I can come up with something a little bit more information about her. I'm always intrigued when I go into one of my primary sources and I find that it has almost no information. In this particular case, it has her dimensions, it has her flag, it has her radio call sign, and it tells me that she's owned by a U.S. company and that she's also managed by that same company, which is in itself a little bit unusual. The Commander-in-Chief has nominated Vice Admiral Linda Fagan, U.S. Coast Guard, to assume a 4-star and to become the Vice Commandant of the Coast Guard. Admiral Fagan is a 1985 graduate of the Coast Guard Academy, and assuming her confirmation, she will be the first lady 4-star admiral in the Coast Guard, not the first one in all of the military. The interesting thing about Admiral Fagan is that when I went to Healy's change of command 2 years ago, I was struck by the fact that Admiral Fagan was there as her operational commander, and the captain who was becoming the new captain in Healy was a lady, and XO was a lady, and it seems to me that it is time for us to stop talking about whether or not there are more women who need to be found and to be put into leadership positions. I am Healy's sea daddy. I have a very personal and close feeling and relationship to her. And as I was sitting at the change of command ceremony, and it is XO's job to organize these and to be the master of ceremonies, in this case, I guess, the mistress of ceremonies, and the captain that she was introducing, the new captain, was a lady, and the operational commander to whom this new captain was reporting that the ship had been properly relieved was also a lady, a 3-star, now soon to be a 4-star. I think it's time for us just to acknowledge that we are promoting the best qualified, regardless of, in this particular case, gender. As I have said several times before, yellow, purple, green, and white, all are precious in my sight. Healy, bless your heart. I'm looking forward to when you are able to deploy again. You all will recall that she had a very serious fire, and they had to change out one of the big main motors, and they did this by going right through the side of the ship. Thursday, the 22nd of April, is Earth Day. If you listened, as I have urged you all to do, to listen to Susan's program before mine, you will have heard her talk to Bill Moyer, who is one of the environmentalists so well known here on the island. And his interview with Susan came at a fortuitous time because Thursday the 22nd is Earth Day, and the Earth Day came about, I did a little digging on this one, and the Earth Day came about starting in 1970, and it is considered to be the birth of the present environmental movement. So here on the island, of course, we celebrate Earth Day in a number of different ways, because we have so much earth here and so many trees and not many, all that many people, 10,000 of us still live here. And in order to properly celebrate Earth Day, if you happen to own and operate a motor vehicle that is able to plug in to a charging station, if you find one that is owned by a company called Electrify America, on Thursday the 22nd of April, you can get into the line of all of the millions of electric car, and I suppose hybrid cars too, that you can drive up, get in the queue, and plug in for a free charging session. So you go on to the Electrify America website, and it will tell you where all of those particular charging stations are located, and you too may plug in to one of those, and you do not have to pay. That's because it's Earth Day, and I am waving at people who want to come in and no doubt want to make some comment or remark about the from the captain's chair, but we're not going to do that today. So there are a couple things of concern that we need to talk about and remind everybody about. The first one is, and this is a big concern, and it is one that's not getting a great deal of attention, along with all of the other things about which we must and should be and need to be concerned. And that is that the Russian bear, is increasing its presence in the Arctic, and it is doing this almost on a daily basis. One of the reasons why the Russians build these enormous and extremely powerful nuclear-powered icebreakers is so that they can move around the Arctic, and in particular the Northern Sea Route that goes from Murmansk in the west all the way across the top of Siberia to Vladivostok in the east. And they want to open this up to be an alternative route. They want to open it up as the ice softens and the season lengthens, so as to provide an alternative for the southern routes. It remains to be seen whether or not this indeed is really going to happen, but they have just completed and are doing sea trials now on Arctica 2. Arctica 1, the first Arctica nuclear-powered icebreaker, was the first surface ship to go to the North Pole, and she has now been replaced by a even more powerful, even larger, absolutely tremendous ship that is going to work to keep the Northern Sea Route open for even longer. But what is even more disturbing is that the military presence, the Russian military presence in the Soviet Arctic, which is pretty close to our Arctic, is being built up with new bases. And so I bring this up because sometimes I feel like your captain is the only voice singing out that besides the rest of all of these things about which we need to be concerned, like the Middle East and other parts of the world where there are constant and have been for a long time pressure points, the Arctic is one of the parts of the world which is our part of the world, and we need to be constantly aware and be ready to react And because we have allowed the icebreaker, the U.S. icebreaker fleet, to diminish down to almost nothing, we are not in a particularly good position right now to react when the next piece of pressure comes down on us. So now's the time for us to be aware of this and be ready to react. I have a story about the United States ship Connecticut, a story which her captain is ashamed to have publicized, and yet it hit, among other places, Navy Times. And Navy Times is the unofficial but very authoritative newspaper of the sea services, of the Coast Guard, the Navy, and the Marine Corps. And so this is an article about the United States ship Connecticut. She is a submarine, and she's infested with bedbugs. And so no captain wants to be commanding a ship which is infested with any sort of thing which are going to be destructive to his crew, submarines in particular. I'm not certain of this, but I believe that in some submarines, maybe not in Connecticut, but in some submarines, they also have to hot bunk because there's only so much space in them for people. The rest of it is taken up with the nuclear plant, taken up with the reactor, with the turbines, taken up with the missiles, if it's a missile ship, with the torpedoes, if it is an attack submarine. And so people's space is very much at a limit. But even if every sailor in her ship's company has his own bunk, or her own bunk, there are now women serving in submarines, has his or her own bunk, the fact that they are sharing that bunk with bed bugs is not a particularly prideful thing. And I would imagine, I've never had them in any ship under my command. I have noticed a cockroach or two, and we aggressively and actively go after them. But I've never had a bed bug infestation. And one of the reasons for that is that on surface ships, you can exercise the air bedding bill. Now, a bill is a list of duties for each sailor, and so there are a number of bills. There's a general quarters bill. There's the mooring stations called the special sea detail bill. There are a number of different bills, and one of them is the air bedding bill, and it says where each department in the ship, what part of the ship each department is allowed to use. And so all of the mattresses are brought out, all of the fart sacks are brought out, and they're all of them laid out on the rail so that the sun can shine down. Now, you have to be really careful when you exercise the air bedding bill that you're not going to be running through rain squalls, because a rain-soaked mattress going back into the ship is not going to be a very pleasant place to bunk up. So in submarines, there's no way, there are no railings that you can put the mattresses there. And besides, they're submerged most of the time. So I would imagine that ridding the United States ship Connecticut of bedbugs is going to be a particularly difficult task. I do not know exactly how that's done, because it would seem to me that you'd have to seal up the ship and get the crew off while she gets fumigated. But in any case, I'm certain that her captain, and in particular her XO, has got this thing hopefully under control. So I've got a piece of news here about one of my shipmates. He was my engineering officer in Unimac, and then when I cross-decked from Unimac to Reliance, I was able to take part of my Unimac crew, and one of the people that I was able to take with me was my engineering officer, Larry Jenkins. And Larry was both a ship's engineer of great skill. He transitioned from one ship to another with a completely different engineering plant. But he also was then and remains today a private pilot. Now, we've talked about our friend Captain O'Brien and his skillful efforts at putting his airplane down and saving both his and his passenger's life. But Larry was, when he was sailing with me, when he was working for me, he was also a private pilot, and he flew a 1946 air coupe. Look it up on some search engine, an air coupe. It was an airplane that was designed to be every man's airplane, that if you could drive a motor car, you could fly an air coupe airplane. And Larry flew and still flies an air coupe. And it is significant to me because he just completed 50 years of holding a private pilot's license. And my XO, who was my XO in Unimac, reported this to me. And I said, I will mention that on the program, because 50 years holding a pilot, private pilot's license, flying that air coupe, whether it's the same one or not, maybe this broadcast will get Larry to get in touch with me and let me know whether it's the same air coupe. But Larry and Jenny, I hope that you all have many, many more years flying together. You did a wonderful job for me, and as my engineering officer, and as my friend, and as my shipmate. And for that, as I am with all of the people who with whom I was privileged to command, I thank you for all of that. The St. Lawrence Seaway has now opened a couple of weeks ago. It has been in existence for 62 years. There are 15 locks from Montreal to Lake Erie, and I took my north wind into the lakes one winter, and as I went through the seaway, the lock master in each one of the locks said, Captain, you're the last one through. This was before Christmas. You're the last one through. We're shutting the locks down. We've been holding it open for you to go up into the lakes. And we're shutting everything down. We'll see you in the springtime. And they gave me the Great Lakes salute, which is a long and too short. That's the short version of it. And they said, we'll see you in the springtime. What I didn't know was that the springtime was not going to come for many, many months. And so I was went through each one of the locks. And this was my first exposure to locking through in seaway locks without the benefit of mules like you have in the Panama Canal. So I'd been through the Panama Canal several times, and most recently coming back from Antarctica with Northwind. But they're so careful. They either now with the larger locks, they either put you in with tugs or use the mules. Up in the Great Lakes, you just drive it in and... but I was so, so careful. And by the end of the season, after I'd locked up and down in locks in the St. Mary's River so many times that I could have written the examination for the lockmaster, you just drive it in, flood the lock chamber, and drive it out. So it's amazing to me how familiarity can breed not contempt, but maybe a little bit less concern for the paintwork. And now, my dear hearts, I have come once again to the end of our time together. Covered a lot of material, but not nearly as much as I had, as is always the case. So I, as always, say that we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. Each one of you who has someone or someone's plural for whom you are responsible and accountable, take good care of them. Watch their six. And as always, your Captain Joe is up in the captain's chair on station and watching properly.